This episode of Stage 9 is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
You're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Stage 9, Trek FM's show about the people who make Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And I know we're a little late this week, but you know what? I just got back to Chicago. Star Trek Las Vegas is still going on. I was there for the whole Discovery thing, which you can hear about over on The Edge, which is available now. Yeah, The Edge number 5. We get very in-depth about all the stuff that they got very in-depth about.
Sweet.
I've got a lot of pictures that I still need to send you, John. I know I sent you like basically everything that Neville Page and Glenn Hetrick put up on the screen for their design panel.
Yeah.
But I was able to get pictures of the costumes and stuff, so I'll send you some key ones.
You sent me some pictures of like the renderings for how they were designing the Klingon outfits and everything, and I gotta say, I will say now what I said to you via text message, that if there's one aspect of the show that has me most excited, it's the Klingons. I mean, Klingons have always been, you know, a thing. Like, a lot of us love them. But seeing all the design that they've put into the Klingons to differentiate them in the different houses and everything is just awesome. I'm so excited just to see that on screen.
Yeah, you know, I've never really cared about Klingons, and I never will, or at least I thought I never would. But then, you know, hearing them talk, it really got me excited about it, because they really are sort of developing a whole culture for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Klingons have always been sort of a broad stroke culture, like the typical Star Trek monoculture. Mm-hmm. There's a planet and everybody's the same. It's like, well, that's not really how it works.
Yeah.
And so to see like differentiations in the houses, but then also unifying elements that every house would, you know, you'd be able to tell that you're dealing with somebody who's from a house in a specific, you know, a race or planet or something like that. I think it's really awesome. It's a level of detail that I think we're not used to getting almost for anything in Trek. I mean, I'm not like bashing Trek, but like usually it's broad strokes for everything. And it really looks like they have developed like a real world building approach with the Klingons. And it's exciting.
Definitely. And, you know, I mean, the thing that they kept on saying in terms of changes and all that stuff is, you know, they wanted to make sure everything about the Klingons, both biologically and in terms of their style, had some sort of reason for existence and, mm-hmm. and sort of like practical application in a sense. Like it was never just done because it looked cool. There was always like a built-in history or scientific reason behind what they were doing in terms of their design. And you know, it really shows in all their work. I mean, they broke down like the whole thing with the skull and everything like that. And like, to me, that like, I know that a lot of people are very critical of how they're changing the look, but to me, it's like everything that was changed was done in service of the story, really.
Right.
And the other thing which really struck me, you know, which we talk about, and we talk about all this stuff over on The Edge this week, but the other thing that really struck me was Glenn Hetrick, the other designer. Like, I get the impression that Neville Page is like the guy who basically comes up with the designs on a conceptual level, and then Glenn Hetrick is the guy who actually builds the stuff, you know.
Nice.
And both of them are like, they both are judges on Face Off, that show, you know, the
makeup effects, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's great. I mean, you know, I really do think that this you know, everybody talks about this, and I know I might sound like a broken record too, but it really is. This is Trek in the age of, you know, film level television. This isn't, you know, to speak to your point about, you know, going into detail and all of that. This isn't, and things serving a purpose. This isn't, oh gosh, we killed Worf in an episode. Klingons have an extra one. Yeah. Oh, okay, everything's fine. Like, it's not that sort of thing. It's building all of this now is in service of the story, but at the same time, it informs where they can go. Like, they're giving themselves the guide rails instead of saying, we wrote ourselves in a corner. What do we have to invent this week?
Right. And like, the thing that Hetrick said, which I found, you know, very, very interesting, was that they have an almost religious dedication to canon, you know?
Like, interesting.
And I mean, they there was something, like, one thing which I think I mentioned to you, which I didn't mention on The Edge, was, like, when they were talking about, like, developing the various houses, like, they wanted to come up with, you know, reasons for, you know, their different looks. And I guess there's one house where, like, everyone has, like, these scars and everything like that. And the inspiration for that came from Christopher Lloyd's dog in Star Trek III, and the idea that, you know, there's a house of, like, beastmasters who, you know, train these animals, and in the process, you know, get all chewed up, you know, from dealing with these vicious creatures, you know?
And that's such a cool thing. That is such a cool thing. And it, like, it almost has shades of Gurney Halleck in Dune, where it's like, you'll be able to tell who has the most experience by the number of scars that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the more beaten up that a guy from the house of the beastmasters is, you know, the more of a bad dude he can be, you know, in a situation. I like that.
But anyway, you know, you can hear a lot of talk about the various Discovery things on The Edge, but, you know, I thought that I might share a couple little things that happened with creators outside of the Discovery.
I very much want to hear this. Yes. You went to, I know that you were very dedicated to going to panels with Ira Stephen Bear while you were there.
Yeah. I mean, that was basically because, like, I went on Wednesday because of this Discovery stuff, and then the schedule came out and it was like 4 hours of Discovery, you know, starting at like 2:30. But before that, there were going to be three panels which Ira Stephen Bear was on. There was going to be like sort of a informal chat with him and Jordan Hoffman in, like, what's basically, it's like Quark's bar, essentially. Like, it's a little stage, like, in a corner with a small, you know, sort of like auditorium configuration, and then, like, in the back of the room, like, the room kind of, like, extends in sort of like an L shape, and there's basically just a bunch of tables with, like, some, you know, well, they actually have like a Quark's bar, you know, back there with, like, an actual Ferengi, like, serving drinks. And then they have, you know, like, your kind of standard convention setup where you can get, like, some sandwiches and some drinks and, you know, not much else, right? And that's sort of just off to the side there. And, you know, that panel was at 10 o'clock in the morning, and he had a couple of others later on in the day. But, you know, I knew that there was that, and, you know, his talk with Rene Auberjonois and Nana Visitor and some other people, and then he was going to do, like, these Deep Space Nine confessionals, they were calling them, which basically they want to get fan stuff for the Deep Space Nine documentary, so they were letting people just come up on stage and say, like, why do you like Deep Space Nine, or why do you hate Deep Space Nine, or basically anything you want to say about Deep Space Nine. And then they were just sort of, like, collecting these to use in the documentary.
See, this is the thing that I, like, we're very much admitted Ira Stephen Bear fans, you know, here. And it's, these are the types of panels that make me want to go to conventions.
Yeah.
You know, like, the stuff that's outside of the box, it's not just, oh, I'm just going to sit down and relay stories you've heard before. It's, hey, audience participation. It's, hey, informal conversation. You know, like, I love that stuff. That's so intriguing.
Yeah, no, for sure, for sure. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, the Vegas convention, one of the things which appeals to it about me, one of the things which appeals to me about it, one of the things, Let me read. One of the things
What is it that appeals to you about the Las Vegas convention, Mike?
It's the fact that it's so small and intimate. You know, the fact that it is in the Rio, you know, the fact that we share a bond over maybe not getting, you know, sick from the contaminated water. You know, the fact that you really don't have to leave the building ever, you know, in the entire weekend. It's like a self-sustaining community or whatever, you know what I mean? You've got Smash Burger over there. You've got, you know, your bedroom upstairs. You got the convention, you know, in the corner, whatever. And because of that, because it's thousands of nerds living together with hundreds of celebrities, there's like a lot of personal interaction in just sort of like everyday life, you know, things that, you know, people do experience every day, like, you know, chatting at, you know, a bar or at a breakfast counter, you know, with just the person who happens to be sitting next to you. But the person who's sitting next to you is the guy who played Moriarty in, you know, Elementary Dear Data. You know, I mean, like, these are things that happen on a regular basis. You know, that literally happened to me, you know, and you never know who you're going to see, what you're going to, you know, whatever, you know, and it's always just kind of like one of those things where it's like, oh, that's so cool. Oh, hey, you know, whatever. So, you know, And anyone who knows me, I think, anyone who listens to this show knows that probably out of all the 125 people or whoever it is who ended up at this thing, like, the person who I'm probably most in awe of is Ira Stephen Bear.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So let me tell you my sad tale of going to this convention with a happy ending, I guess. So,
all right.
Okay.
It's got to have a happy ending, Mike.
Yeah. So, okay, I go, my whole plan was like, I'm going to fly in on Tuesday night, go see the Discovery stuff on Wednesday, fly out on Thursday, you know, just very, very quick. I found cheap flights, cheap hotels, cheap tickets to the show, all that stuff, you know, and I go on, you know, Tuesday, and I'm like, this will be perfect. I've got a nice afternoon flight. I can sleep in. I can you know, get In-N-Out Burger and then head over to the Palms and see a movie. You know, I was going to go see Baby Driver, you know, which is one of the things that I love doing when I'm on vacation, probably more than anything else, is like sneaking away from whatever it is and going to see a movie. There's just something about like surrendering to the randomness of whatever the local movie theater is and seeing what it's like, seeing how the locals watch movies. I don't know. There's just something about that.
But see,
I
the
love.
Thing is that explains how this whole show, you know, when it was Commentary Trek Stars and now a Stage 9, the whole premise behind this show is looking at different aspects of everything. And so I'm totally on board with you. Seeing a movie in a different location than you're used to, there's like a whole different movie culture that goes on with that. And it can inform how much you might enjoy or not enjoy a film. I'm on board with that. I think that's really cool.
I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. Everyone thinks I'm crazy. Like, why would you want to see a movie when you're on vacation? I'm like, it's not even really about the movie. Like, I'm actually like trying to like almost force the issue most of the time. Like, I've seen all these movies, but I guess I'll see this thing again. You know, that kind of thing. But regardless of that, that was my plan. That was my big plan. So my flight is delayed for 2 hours, right? And that was hell on earth, you know, sitting on the plane for an hour and then the captain saying, okay, it's going to be 4 hours. Everybody get off the plane. And then like half of the plane gets off and then they tell us, okay, everybody sit back down. You know, we're going to be taking off. It's not as bad as it seemed, you know, that sort of thing.
Was it a storm?
No, it was a broken part, but it was apparently a really obscure part, and they weren't sure whether or not the airport had a spare. And then it was like, are we going to get another plane? And then they opened it up, and they're like, oh, it's really not that bad. We can fix that in just a few minutes. So
yeah, a little duct tape, some prayers.
Exactly.
You did fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Hurtling through the sky, as nobody was ever intended.
It was like a flap seal or something like that, which is broken. I don't know. Whatever. But we got there okay, you know, just 2 hours late. And it's like, whatever. Yeah. Okay, so, maybe I'll skip the movie. Who knows? And I get in the airport shuttle. and we're driving down the expressway, and you know that thing where like there's a distinct feel to it where you're slowing down rather rapidly, and you know it's because there's something up ahead which you're probably gonna hit, you know?
Yes, I'm familiar with that very much.
So I had that feeling, right? And I'm like, I really hope we stop before we hit whatever's in front of us. And we did, but the guy behind us didn't. And he rammed really, really hard into the back of that shuttle, like so much so that his van, the front end of his van, was like crushed like an aluminum can. It was crazy.
Oh, that's all. Nobody was hurt, were they?
Nobody was hurt, you know, which I was, because I was in the front. So I was like, oh, you know, it was kind of like a jolt at like a ride at Disney World or something like that. But there were a bunch of like seniors in the back, and I'm like, oh, no. But all of them were fine. And the guy driving the car was fine, too, even though his airbag didn't go off, which is weird. But anyway, that doesn't matter. So everyone's okay. But of course, you need to wait for the police, file the report, wait for another shuttle to come and pick you up, which, by the way, and I'm not saying that, you know, I'm doing something wrong here or anything, but this is the second time in three trips that the shuttle I was on away from the, you know, going from the airport to the hotel was in an accident. And we had
This is an important tip in case any listeners or fellow hosts on Trek FM ever travel anywhere with you, not to get into your shuttle or cab. You should ride alone, Mike.
Yes. I highly recommend that. So, you know, I finally get to the hotel, and at this point I'm like, I've had it. I just need to get to the room, and you know, so I go through the whole registration process. And they're like, here you go, room 1505. And I'm like, okay, cool. And, you know, it's not like the room is right next. I mean, this, like I said, this is like, a whole community here.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been in the Rio before when I've been in Vegas for business. And, yeah, I know the size and scope that you're talking about for sure.
So, you know, I walk all the way down to the thing with the elevator and everything like that. And, you know, I get on the elevator and I go all the way up to the 15th floor. I find my room, get into the room, and, like, I notice that the lights are on. And I'm like, that's weird, since there's literally, like, a sign right next to the light, which says, don't forget to turn off the light. And I'm like, you'd think that the employees would actually do this. But they didn't. So I'm like, okay, that's weird, whatever. So then you go in, and there's like a little corridor, you know, at first where like the restroom is and everything like that. And there's like a little counter. And on the counter, I see like a half-empty bottle of ginger ale. And I'm like, okay, housekeeping, good job. You know, cleaning up this stuff, but whatever. I don't care. So then I walk into the room itself, and I see sitting on the bed some luggage. And I'm like, oh crap. I'm in somebody else's room. And it's like one of those things where, like, I'm backpedaling, like, I really hope that no one's, you know, and then I, like, shut the door, and I, like, ran to the elevator as quickly as I could, and I'm like, this is some BS right here. Like, all this stuff, and all I want to do is go to a room, and then, you know, and I'm like, God, this, and now I have to walk all the way back to the front desk and all this stuff. So, you know, I'm
just
sitting
just
there.
Be glad it's not the TV trope. You didn't walk in on like the drug deal going down.
That's
or something
true.
Like that,
that's
right?
True.
At least nobody was actually in there.
Yes, that is true. So, you know, I'm sitting there waiting for the elevator, just like this trip is off to an amazing start. God, you know, and the doors to the elevator open up, and who's standing on the elevator? Ira Stephen Bear.
That is amazing. That seriously, all that you went through, and it's almost as if some higher power, call it God, call it the universe, whatever you want to call it, dropped that right there and said, you know what? You've had a rough go, Mike. Here. Meet yeah. Iris Stephen Bear.
Yeah, that's what my wife said. She's like, if your flight wasn't 2 hours late, if you didn't get into that car crash, if you didn't get the wrong room, you know, then that wouldn't have happened. And look, I'm not saying that this was like a life-changing event or anything like that, because like, it's not like, you know, once I was on the elevator with Iris Stephen Bear, I was like, tell me the secrets of Deep Space Nine. And he's like, well, let me break it down for you, or anything like that.
The secret ingredient was love.
Like, it's literally like, I don't know. I mean, I know that, you know, there are people who are like, hey, you know, whatever, or hey, you know. But to me, I don't know. Like, I always have this feeling of like, he's just trying to get to his room too, right? You know, maybe he was just in a car accident or whatever, and he doesn't want to be bothered by a bunch of fans. And, you know, he knows that we're all swarming around this place, but still, you know, give the guy a break. He wears, you know, sunglasses for a reason, you know? So I just said, you know, hi. And we, you know, took the elevator down to the, you know, lobby, and then, you know, he graciously let me off first, you know, which was very nice or whatever. And but it was just like, I don't know, it was just like this nice little moment.
That is cool, and I applaud you for letting him have his elevator ride in peace. It was I'm willing to bet that you gave him one of his favorite moments of the convention, because when the elevator opened up, he probably thought, oh, I can't even go get a burger without some. Hey, all right. It's cool. That this is this reminds me of just random thought. I was taking an Amtrak train many, many years ago, the night after I saw Elvis Costello in concert. And he was waiting aside from, you know, the line with all of the regular people in it. And it was a moment where, you know, he was standing there and he had that look on his face like, please just ignore me. Please just ignore me. And I remember just looking at him and was like, sup? And just like kept on walking sort of thing. So I think that you cannot undervalue the treat that you gave Mr. Iris Stephen Bear on that elevator trip. Well done, Mike. Well done.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I hope so. I hope so, you know. You know, it was just one of those things which was really cool. And you know, I feel like you know, we bonded in that moment, because, you know, the next morning he bought me coffee. Okay, so here's what happened, and this is why I love Iris Stephen Bear. Okay, I really, really do. So his first panel, like I was saying, was at 10 o'clock in the morning on the first day, you know, like one of the very first panels of the entire show. And, you know, it's in that room with like the, you know, concessions area in the back and everything like that. And I mean, like I say, like room, like an auditorium with a concessions area in the back, like we're talking like a massive room. Okay. It's like, there's this section over here. It, like under normal circumstances, there'd probably be like walls in between these things, you know, it's almost like three separate rooms just in one shared space, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're all sitting there, and he comes out on stage. There was a guy who actually did the Iris Stephen Bear cosplay, which was spot on. You know, they brought him up on stage, and they took pictures and everything. And then Jordan Hoffman, who was hosting this panel, was like, okay, so let's, you know, get into this. And Bear is just like, okay, look, here's the thing. We could do this panel, but it's 10 a.m. on the first day. I'm going to be talking about Star Trek all weekend long. Really, what haven't I said about Star Trek? You know, it's all the same stuff. I feel like everyone needs sort of like a jump start to the day. So I'm thinking maybe instead of the panel, we should just all go get coffee. And,
so
you know,
awesome.
There was like one of those things where like everyone in the room was like, ha ha ha, ha, ha. Okay, so, you know, like one of that, those things.
And yeah.
And he's like, okay, so I don't know where we would do this. Like, where would we go? And someone's like, right back there. And he's like, okay, so you guys want to get coffee? And everyone's like, sure. You know, at this point, it's like the joke has gone on really long. Like, your comic timing is weird, Iris Stephen Bear. You know, so he's like, okay, let's go. And he gets up, and everyone's just kind of looking like, what do we do? And then he starts like walking down the aisle, you know, in, like walking into the crowd, you know, and as he's walking, everyone's just kind of sitting there, like, what's going on? Like, what is he doing? Are we actually doing this? And he's like, come on, let's go. Come on. You know, so then people sort of like hesitantly start standing up and like following him down the aisle. And like he gets to the front, to the cashier, and he's like, okay, who wants coffee? You know, raise your hand if you want coffee. And everyone raises their hand, and he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's like, okay, 50 coffees. He's like, go get your coffee. And then everyone just lined up and got coffee. And then he just stood in the back and held I guess the equivalent of like a press gaggle, a con gaggle or whatever, you know, where like everyone just kind of gathered around him and just had like a very informal Q&A chat.
Oh, that is awesome. That is so cool. Like that, but the thing is, that's the memory. That's going to stick out for you. No matter however many other conventions you go to, you're going to say, oh yeah, but there was that one time where Ira Stephen Bear bought 50 coffees for everybody and just had an informal panel.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's what people should be looking for in conventions. I love it.
Yeah, I know. Same thing here. You know, I know like maybe some people were disappointed that he didn't like get super in depth in Star Trek or whatever, but like, I mean, that's the sort of thing, like as much as I'd love to talk to Bear, like I don't feel like I have anything to ask him about Star Trek because the Star Trek Companion exists, and it's like the most thorough, you know, examination of the creation of a TV show. Like, what am I going to ask him?
And I think that's also one of the things that's such a challenge with, you know, when you have regular conventions. I mean, conventions used to be a fairly rare thing, and now it's a whole industry, and it's very big. And there's a thing where it can actually get trying. As somebody who's been to conventions, you kind of have to put in your brain, okay, it's somebody's first time hearing this story.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of, you know, to put it in a different context, how many times can you hear the story of Harrison Ford being hired for Star Wars and how it was serendipitous before you say, yeah, I know you're a car. Okay. Let's get to something else.
Yeah.
And so I think that this speaks to that. And that, again, that's not to reduce it and say, again, it's somebody's first time hearing that story. You can't make the presumption everybody knows it. But at the same time, I think that when you get to something like Star Trek Las Vegas, this is a destination event where most everybody showing up knows a fair amount of the backstory to mm-hmm. everything. And he still had an informal Q&A, so I'm sure that somebody who had a question could have gotten up there and, you know, and gotten a question into him.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Probably that it was more likely that they got that question in than having to wait in line and raise your hand and worry about the time clock and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was really cool, you know? And I mean, it just, to me, kind of like speaks to his personality and says mm-hmm. more about him and his work than, you know, him answering a bunch of Star Trek questions really ever could, you know?
Yeah, well, you would, and you would mention when you with the movie Lucky,
yeah,
where, you know, that the writer or director was asked, you know, how did he contribute, and he said that he just got up and he would just like walk around the room in circles, like talking out loud and getting ideas out there. And it's, you know, so yeah, you're right, it does speak to his style.
Yeah, yeah. I did hold on to my coffee cup there. I rinsed it out and everything. I never drink coffee, but I'm like, okay, you know, if Ira Stephen Bear is going to buy me coffee, I'll have a coffee, you know. But I was carrying it around because I thought, well, I've run into this guy like 15 times now, because I did keep, like, it was weird. Like, he was all over the place. You know, I kept on running into him. And I'm like, I'm going to hold on to this. And, you know, if I see him, I'll get him to sign it and, you know, just put it on my shelf. Because, I mean, that's cool, right? I mean, that's cooler than getting him to sign, like, a DVD or something.
I completely agree. How many people have that coffee cup with his autograph on it?
Exactly.
That's very...
I didn't run into him. I did run into him twice, but I didn't have the cup with me, you know, either of those times. So... I do have the coffee cup sitting on my shelf. It's got a place of honor next to the 2005 World Series ring and Cher from Clueless. So there you go.
Excellent. It belongs there.
So okay, that was my con experience. You know, I mean, there's, you know, certainly other people who were there and everything, but I missed a lot of it. You know, it's still going on now, you know, as of this recording and as of this release. But, you know, there was some stuff that happened, like, earlier in the week that was rather exciting, I guess.
A different type of con experience, maybe?
There you go. Yes.
Yeah. Nailed it.
So, you know, we've talked previously about how Nicholas Meyer has said that he's working on another Star Trek project unrelated to Discovery. And nobody knows
yes.
what it is.
And there was and also- somebody asked, could you assume it's a TV show? And he said something like, you can assume what you want to, or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. They said, could you assume that it's not a TV show? And he said, you can assume. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Geek Exchange reported that they have a couple of sources who have said that he's developing a television miniseries which will look at Khan on SETI Alpha 5 in the years between Space Seed and Wrath of Khan, which is an interesting concept.
I think it's a wonderful concept. I think it's a, if executed well, which I, given who's a creator on it, I have faith it would be. That is a concept where I don't think anybody's ever explored that before, have they?
Yeah, they have actually. There's a couple of books by a guy named Greg Cox about Khan, where it really, I think there, it's like a two book series.
Did he actually deal with SETI? Because I remember it came out years ago, and I remember the first book very clearly, but I don't remember the second book as clearly. Did he actually go into SETI Alpha 5?
From what I understand, yes. Like, I think maybe the first book deals with, like, you know, pre. You know,
yeah, it gives an alternate history version of explaining how Khan, his version of being exiled in 1996, reconciles with where we were technologically in real 1996.
Right, right. I think the second book deals with the time on SETI Alpha 5, or maybe there was like a third book that was done. I don't know. Did you read that or not or?
No. I remember reading the first book very clearly. I might not have made it all the way through the series, or I might just be getting older and not remember everything. Okay. But I remember the first book very much because I thought it was extremely clever the way that he did ameliorate the conspicuous differences between reality and the TV series. I thought it was very creative. I remember that about the first book.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I haven't read either, and you know, this is people keep on bringing this up, like, "Whoa, Greg Cox did that," you know that kind of thing, and that it was apparently very good from by all accounts. I mean, I know that you've said that you've liked it, and other people have too. But you know, it's one. Well, for one thing, someone did reach out to Meyer for comment, and his response was, "I cannot possibly comment."
Yes.
So take that as you will.
I you know, if there's anybody having more fun with the fans during the creation of Star Trek Discovery and other stuff, I would struggle to think if anybody's having more fun than Meyer right now. Between Star Trek Dog leaking certain jokes that are getting out through there, and comments like that, you know, he's obviously having a lot of fun doing what he's doing right now. And I think that, you know, that speaks well of where the production is. Because, you know, with all of the behind the scenes, for lack of a better word, tumult, you have to wonder, what does that do for morale and creativity? And this would be an indication that it hasn't impeded that in any way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, okay, I'm down with this concept too, you know, but when you think about it, it makes a lot of sense. You know, who knows whether or not it's true, right? But it makes a lot of sense from a business standpoint, you know? They've already said that they're trying to think of things that they can do in order to keep people subscribed to CBS All Access while they're waiting for the new season of Discovery, right? So, like, if you look at the Marvel model with, like, Agent Carter, for example, where it's like a smaller show that they do like during the, you know, S.H.I.E.L.D. hiatus, you know, in order to kind of like fill that gap or whatever. It's just a mini series, and you know, it's a much, you know, smaller scale production. You know, you think about it with Star Trek, like this is a Star Trek show, which, okay, you can put on in between seasons of Discovery. It's a great idea, which will get people excited, you know, with, you know, obviously Nicholas Meyer at the helm. That's going to get people excited. And yet, like, you think about the concept, it's a Star Trek show without anything taking place in space. Like,
yeah,
you're cutting down your budget drastically, yeah, with that.
Instead of a bottle show, you've got a bottle series.
Exactly.
And I think, although you will have to, I imagine at some point, I mean, depending on what their point of attack is with the story, they'll have to maybe have some big effects for when the change happens.
Yeah.
You know, with the explosion and everything. But even that, you know, you could just have an explosion in the sky at the end of one show, and then, you know, at the beginning of the next one, it's a you shot in the desert instead or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, and whatever it is, like, I can't imagine they would go into space to do it. I mean, if you think, like, if this is from Khan's perspective, right, you got to see the explosion or whatever it is from the planet. I mean, you shake the camera around a little bit, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's all good.
It's worked for us for decades on Star Trek.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I don't know, from a business standpoint, like, you know, the fact that it's created by a guy who's already involved with the production of Discovery, you know, I mean, that tends to be how these things work. Like, you know, they get a couple of writers who, you know, basically do this thing on the side or whatever it is and try to develop it. And if it hits, great. If it doesn't, then they're back on, you know, the main show, whatever. I mean, it seems like a slam dunk. Like, it's almost the type of thing where, like, if it weren't a real thing, you would think that CBS would hear that report and be like, oh, yeah, we should do that, you know? Because,
yeah, I think from another perspective, too, you've got, because there are fans who, you know, and I'm not going to call anybody's reasoning into question or anything, but there are fans who are bothered by some of the stylistic choices with Discovery and stuff like that. What better way to make those fans happy and give them a reason to subscribe than to say, hey, we know you like Khan, and we're going to put it somewhere where you don't have to worry about anything changing about the show's, you know, design aesthetic or anything like that. You will get them on board as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'm really, really excited about this now. I really, really hope it's a real thing and that it actually is happening.
Yes, I'm right there with you. I mean, this would be the type of thing. I'm excited about Discovery. All of the stuff that you shared, all of the pictures that you shared are just, they were amazing. And I'm getting more and more excited for Discovery as time goes on. And then with this news, I mean, this would indicate to me that CBS has a real firm grasp on what they want to do. And in another way as well, you know, the information has come out that Fuller wanted to do an anthology series.
Yeah.
Well, this sort of relieves that pressure valve as well, where in a sense they are doing an anthology series, but it's not Discovery that's an anthology series. It's like an anthology family.
Yeah.
It's all Star Trek. It's just, you know, it speaks to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting times in the world of Star Trek, you know, things have changed.
Indeed.
You know, there's just too many things now. Too many things, too many things.
No, not too many things. Not too many things yet. Things.
Yes, yes. Anyway, it'll be exciting to see what happens in the coming months. All right, well, it's been fun talking about creation and the convention, you know, not the actual biblical whatever, and
yes, that's true.
And you know, the Nicholas Meyer thing and all that good stuff, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Warp 5. I just thought, you know, those are where, of course, some of the other Enterprise references come up. He was a Mako. He fought in those Indian Romulan Wars. I really like that background and that tie-in. And it makes sense that, you know, over the course of 100 years, that somebody's going to kind of go a little crazy and, you know, get to this point where they're just, you know, seething for some kind of revenge or something. So
the ready room.
Of all the things people to wonder about and question and be concerned about canon and visual canon on Discovery, the Klingons haven't concerned me that much because I think the Klingons are ripe and long overdue for, you know, for lack of a better term, some species diversity. And one of the things that Star Trek is prey to, and people acknowledge it, but still, we wish it wasn't a limiting factor, was TV budgets.
The 602 Club.
That emotional core, and I tie that too with the mentors that Peter doesn't have throughout the film. There's nobody there to pick up that Uncle Ben slack.
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
Welcome to The Edge, Trek FM's brand new podcast where we dive into the final frontier of the newest Star Trek series, Star Trek Discovery, the first Star Trek series to be on air in 12 and a half years, something like that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and discover what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app, and get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and review. If you're not on Apple, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, maybe SoundCloud if it still exists, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well. We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's episode. So if you want to contact us, the best place to join the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, which is our listener group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and we should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just pick send to a show and select stage 9, and we'll come right up. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. John, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, gosh, you can find me as Kessel Junkie, as my online name. I'm all over the place. And you can find me co-hosting Words with Nerds with my pal Craig, which is a variety nerd show. You can find me co-hosting Aggressive Negotiations with Matthew Rushing over on the Nerd Party Network, which is a Star Wars show where we delve into the philosophical stuff of Star Wars. And then you can also find me on the Nerd Party Network co-hosting Great Shot Kid with you, where we look at the technical and inspirational side of Star Wars.
Yes, you can find me over there on the Nerd Party doing that. You can also find me on CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars. And you can find me on TalkFilmSociety.com doing Soderbergh 2828. And you can find me right here on the network doing a show called The Edge, which is all about Discovery. And, you know, if you're listening to this show, I highly, highly recommend listening to this week's episode of The Edge. It just came out. It's episode 5. It's called Disco Day. It's all about everything that happened at Star Trek Las Vegas on Wednesday from a Discovery, you know, perspective or point of view or whatever. And it's basically everything that we talk about there we would have talked about here if we weren't talking about it over there. So definitely.
So it's sort of like the Nick Meyer show. We're part of the anthology of Discovery news from the convention.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I guess if you think like they're like Discovery, we're like the con show, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think that's a good way to put it.
So definitely check that out. I highly recommend it. It's one of our better episodes, if I do say so myself. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K. We'd like to thank our associate producers, Chris Steftenagel, Jeff Sutter, and Norman C. Lau.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much. If you want to be like Chris, Jeff, and Norm, head on over to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm, and become a patron of the network. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, available through our special patrons website, Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. All right. It's been a crazy week, but, you know, it's over. It's there. It's done. Well, not for everyone else. People are still at the con. The con's just getting started, you know, for some. But for me, it's over. So... And I can't say that I'm upset about that either. But next week, come back, and you know, I didn't mention that Akiva Goldsman was at the convention. It was awesome to see him. I you know, he wasn't like, you know, doing any like personal whatevers, although Adam Drozin said that he saw him walking around the floor at one point. Apparently huge Star Trek fan, went to his first convention in 1976, and now he's, you know, an executive producer on Discovery. It sounds like his involvement is much greater than what we were speculating, and he literally said that right now Discovery is the single most important thing in his creative life.
Wow, that is a statement.
It is a statement when you consider everything that he's doing and things which are, I would say, much more higher profile than Discovery. But yeah, he's taking this very seriously. Like, it sounds like Star Trek is his passion. And, you know, we're going to take a look at another one of his movies next week. The one that just came out today, The Dark Tower.